Moncrief on News Talk.
It is indeed time for parenting. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
First question is this. Our five-year-old seems to be a rather unreliable narrator of her own life. We never knew for sure if what she was telling us is true or not. Whenever we ask her about school or new friends, she tells us some names, but they often sound made up. Or when she tells us about activities at school, sometimes what she is relaying doesn't seem credible. Let me give you an example. Last week, she claimed that there's no singing in her class at all. But then later that day, she was singing a song that we hadn't heard before. We are worried that she's becoming very blasé about truth, about what is real and what isn't. It's very frustrating and makes it hard for us to assess her progress.
Ah, no, don't worry about her progress. I just think calling that she's a rather unreliable narrator of her own life, that is a phrase I'm going to use about myself in life. Like, that's just so funny.
Everybody is.
You know, but I think, look, she's five. She sounds fabulous, by the way. She sounds creative and imaginative with a really rich imagination and fantasy world, which is what you want for children that age. That stage of play they're in is that narrative play, you know, where it's all about stories and details and, you know, of course, massive embellishments along the way. And they're interweaving, you know, details that they might have, you know, heard in stories or seen on TV shows with what's happening in their real world. And it's all beginning to blur and blend together. I think she sounds developmentally, unless there's more context to this than this example, she sounds developmentally exactly where I'd expect a five-year-old to be. And sometimes when we say to our young children, especially this time of year, because we're all excited about being back at school, right? Let's call it that. We're excited. Mm. But we interrogate them when they come in, you know, how is it? What you do? Did you learn anything?
Course,
Did you do anything? And sometimes they mightn't have a very good story for us. So they give us a good story instead, you know?
Yeah.
Like, well, nothing much happened, but I bet you'd be delighted if I told you this, this and this. So I do. And always hold in mind that learning how to tell lies is a developmental task just as much as learning to tell the truth is. And she is slap bang in that experimental stage with the truth, that flexibility of narrative. She's young. She's in the throes of imaginary narrative play. I think if you could be playful rather than judgmental in how you respond to this, so don't come at her with a, I've caught you out, aha, kind of moment.
Yeah, yeah.
But instead, you know, be excited with her and go, wow, that's an amazing story. Now, is that a real story or an imagination story?
Yeah.
And let her go, it is amazing, but it is an imagination story. Let her categorize her stories, but you're communicating that you welcome both. Okay.
Yes.
You could also say when she's like,
and she knows the difference.
Oh,
she?
I mean, she is. And she will when you give her that way of differentiating between what's real and what's imagination. But that you don't say that's a lie, because you are allowed to use and should be using your imagination. I think be playful. You're more likely to get the truth out of her. But equally, when she says something like, there is no singing in our class in junior infants, like, you know, and you can be like confused. You could play that really confused and say, really? No singing at all? And I wonder if I was to ask your teacher the same question, would they give me the same answer or would they say something different? And then she might say, well, they would say something different. Okay. Yeah. Or she'll double down and say, no, that's the absolute story and I'm sticking to it. But you could also say to her in a playful way, if you were the teacher, how would you run the day? And let her go really into that fantasy imaginary world. I think meet her in it, but don't try like, and this bit about it's hard for us to assess her progress. She's five. Stop. Like, if she is happy to go to school and she's happy coming home from school and she's playing and singing and dancing and telling you stories, job done. She's beautifully five.
Yeah. I was recently diagnosed with prostate cancer, which has spread into my lower back. After my diagnosis, I spoke with my doctor on how I should approach this topic with my children. He told me to be honest with them, but emphasize it was just a diagnosis and not a death sentence. I did that. And although there were a lot of tears on the day, I felt the general reaction from my children was good and they took it in their stride. Last week, my wife walked into our sitting room and saw my son crying on the couch. She asked him what was wrong, knowing it was probably about me, and he told her he had Googled my cancer and that he read I only have a 20% survival rate. Of course, I don't know what website he looked at, and I don't want to know. I've tried to avoid Dr. Google myself. Since Googling this news, he is way more upset about my illness. Do you have any ideas how to calm him down? I don't have the answers to the question he wants, and he's 16 years of age, so I can't lie to him.
No, no, sure, nor should you. And I'm so sorry about the diagnosis and what you're dealing with yourself, but also as a family. I think, you know, something that when you get news like this, it's, oh my gosh, your first thought as you're reading here is, what about the children? How do I tell the children, you know? And you've done a really good job with that. And your doctor is quite right. The cancer support groups that we have throughout Ireland are just amazing organisations. They do tremendous work in communities and are well worth supporting. But if you go to your local cancer support group, they may well have access to a therapist. They'd often have therapists who work with them or alongside them or volunteer hours with them, who could give a space for your son to think and feel and process some of this out loud in a way that he's not upset and upsetting you, and then he's upset about upsetting you, but a space where he can really just fall apart if he really wants to and exhale some of that worry and stress that he's holding. And I think that would be well worth doing. And you can present it to him in a way that also acknowledges his fears. This is scary news. It's okay to be scared about it. And then what you really need to do then is sit with him, go for a walk, go for a drive, whatever's going to work with how you're feeling, and just acknowledge that he has read some scary stuff and remind him that at best, Google can give us a vague, generalized statistic. That's what Google does. Google is good at doing that. But that cannot take in the uniqueness of each medical case. And that instead of Google, you are deciding to listen to your doctors because they know you, they know your case, they know what's going on. And this is what they are saying. And be honest with him. They are saying that we're going to have some treatment. There may well be surgery, but there's certainly going to be treatment. It's not going to be easy, but they're really hopeful. And they're talking about this as a diagnosis, not a death sentence, and that my goal here is to get better and to recover. If that story changes, I will talk to you about that directly. You will not have to Google it. I will talk to you. And I think if you create that trust and openness with him, that, you know, that your focus now is really on recovery and how he can help you with that, but also that part of you being able to focus on recovery is knowing he's okay as well, and that this is why you would like him to be, have a space that's his and talk about it. I just think he's reacting to really sad news. He's gone to where, let's be honest, Sean, all of us go. He's gone to Google with the question.
And most adults would be doing the same thing.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, and we know we shouldn't. We all know we shouldn't do that because no good comes from doing that. And it's often a worst case scenario you're going to get on that. But I also think he has seen it now. So acknowledge the fear and give him a place to process it while reminding him that you are the person to ask those questions, not the internet. And that you, his other parent, you will always sit with him. You will always be open and honest. And that when the story changes, you will bring it to him because he's 16. Yeah. He does need to know this. And just go gentle with yourself with this. This is huge news for a family to process and digest. So there will be, you know, we're doing really well. We're having a bad day. And that's all normal.
Yeah. We are expecting our first child in December. And my husband and I are at odds over the type of parenting technique we want to adapt when our baby arrives. For context, both of us come from homes where we do not have the strongest relationship with our parents. We put this down to how we were raised and how our parents dealt with certain situations. We want to be sure to try and avoid this from happening with our children. We have done some research and read about the four main types of parenting: authoritarian, permissive, uninvolved, and positive. Sorry, but they're not judgmental titles at all, are they? We can see the pros and cons to most. Does your expert have any suggestions on how to use different types of parenting styles when the baby comes, and what would be the most advisable?
This is such a familiar question for me. Many expectant parents reach out and contact proactively going, I want to do a parenting session. I really want to come into this. And I get it. And I admire it, actually, because it's coming from a really good place of I want to do right by my kid. And that should always be commended. Now, all of that said, stop it. Yeah. Like, just no, there are not four types of parenting. And those words are just horrific as well, you know, and you'll tie yourself up in knots about this. I think there are things, what jumps out at me from this letter is you have both spoken with each other about how you experienced being parented. That's huge. That's really important.
Of course.
That's something in your co-parenting. We should always know how each other experienced being parented, because that, no matter what style you consciously decide you're going to adopt or not adopt, no matter how many books you read, and I will tell you to read a couple of books, but no matter how many you do, we don't parent from our heads. We parent from what we experienced, we parent from what we know, and we parent from our own activations. And the best thing any of us can do is understand what our triggers are, understand what's in us to be activated. There is no better way to discover your own unresolved issues than to become a parent.
Yeah.
Your kids will bring stuff you didn't even know you had in there to deal with to the surface. So you give a commitment to yourself, your child, each other, that as you are confronted with something along the way, you will name it and deal with it. And that's a really positive thing to do. I think then you just need to exhale, like really exhale with this and accept you are not going to parent from your heads, but you are not going to parent like you were parented either, because you're talking about it and you're sharing. I'm going to tell you to read my own first book, because it's going to give you a parental audit where you can capture some of those old experiences and make sense of them, along with a very playful approach to how can you practically work through all of that in your parenting. So that's 15 Minute Parenting, the 0 to 7 book. There is also a book by Hoffman, Powell and Cooper. You know, when it's written by three people now, it's quite hard hitting. So brace yourself. And it's called Raising a Secure Child. And that is the parent book that is attached to the Circles of Security parenting program. Now, it's an intense read, but it is accessible and it's very helpful. Circles of Security is a therapeutic parenting program. A lot of primary care centers around the country and SPEC services are offering that at the moment. It's worth reaching out and seeing, is there one in your area? Because even ahead of becoming a parent, you could say proactively, my partner and I would really like to enroll on this course, and they would really be assisting you with that. But it's an interesting one to look up and read on. But the book that it centers around, because it's those three guys that also developed that program, but it's called Raising a Secure Child. It's also a useful read. But I just think keep talking to each other about how you were parented, how you experienced being parented, and add in one more reflection. How do you wish you'd been responded to? What difference would that have made to you as a child? And let that be your starting point going forward. And maybe think, you know, how were my successes, my good moments celebrated or responded to? How were my, you know, difficult moments? How was I responded to when I was sick or unwell or having a tough time with my behavior? Really tease that apart. And if going to meet with a therapist for a parenting consultation would really help you to negotiate some of the more nuanced details and reflections in that, that's also worth doing. But don't be going, this is a bit like the 16-year-old in the question before, don't be going to the internet to say, now, what are the styles of parenting and which of those four categories will I fall into? Because that's just not how it works.
Mm. Is there a danger, though? I suppose it's a danger for all of us, in the sense of if you were raised a certain way and then you come to the conclusion when you have your own child on the way, well, my parents didn't boost my self-confidence, and then you go mad boosting.
Overcompensate.
You overcompensate and you go too far with that.
Well, because you're still using your parents as a benchmark. So you're saying, I won't do it like them, but they're still the loudest voice informing what you do.
Yeah.
Because even if you consciously say, I'm going to do the extreme opposite, they're still the reason you're doing that. So you'd be better off to do a process that helps you to integrate and work through what that experience was like for you, so that you can make meaning of it and go, well, okay, now it's a part of me and it's informing how I parent or not, but it's not impeding. Mm. And that's the difference. I think if you see it definitely won't be that, and you pull too far, too fast the other way, you're actually going to be doing what I'd call, here's another little title for parenting, inauthentic parenting. You'll come across as very performative. It won't feel natural. And there you won't have that natural connection then. And that's what's most important for your child is connection. But if you're saying, deep breath, page 4 told me to do it this way, and then you perform that, that's not authentic connection.
Yeah, indeed. Thanks a million. As ever, thank you. Joanna, that was Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.